grab some popcorn and a favorite chair. The love of movies is why we're here. Press play and don't delay. Let Phil be our guide to a cinematic day. Phil at the movies, through the silver screen to his podcast stream. Phil's covering every movie dream. Phil at the movies. Phil at the movies.
And there you have it. Welcome back, everybody, to another show of Phil at the Movies. I'm your host, Phil Walsh, and this is episode number 148 of this ongoing podcast that is, you guessed it, For the Love of Movies. And on that idea about the love of movies, I've tried over the last 3 years and nearly 150 episodes to review and discuss personal favorites of mine. And I think up until this point, I've done pretty well. I've covered, I think, most of my sort of all-time favorites. Again, sure, I'm missing a few. I'm not looking directly at my list, my roster of films. But there's one movie that has escaped my attention over the last 3 years. And I thought, given that we are now in the midst of award season, and by the time you're listening to this episode, the Academy Award nominations for this year will be unveiled and be out there for review, for discussion. And I will do an episode leading up to the Oscars where I will give my prediction on who will win for each respective category, what movie I think will take home the top prize. But I'm also going to do, sort of as a sidebar, an episode dedicated to Phil at the Movie, at the Movies version of the Oscars. So films and performances that I personally would recognize and movies that I think sadly would not be in consideration for, by the Academy. So that will be something to look forward to right before the Oscars. So I'll certainly do my predictions for this year, but I'm also going to do my own take on films that I would have nominated and performances that I would have recognized. So look for that in your podcast feed in the coming weeks. But as I said, back to the point of talking about personal favorite films of mine, there is one movie that has not I have not discussed yet on the show. And again, given that we are in the midst of awards season, it feels appropriate. And especially given that this film is, thus far, we'll see what happens this year at the Academy Awards, but thus far, this is the only horror film to ever win Best Picture at the Academy Awards. Now, I might give you an idea for you astute listeners out there of which film I am referring to, but give you another hint. It is the only film, one of the few films, to go all the way at the Academy Awards, meaning it took the five prestigious top awards. So we're talking Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, and Best Picture. Now, again, if that is not enough of a clue, perhaps you should go and get some fava beans and a nice Chianti to enjoy this episode. So I think that may have definitely been the final clue. So the film today that I will be talking about and sharing my just deep appreciation for and admiration is The Silence of the Lambs. The little film that could. This was a small film made on a budget of $19 million. It is, interestingly enough, not everyone remembers this or realizes it. This is the second film at the time to feature Hannibal Lecter, and it's a recast. Brian Cox played the character in the first film, Manhunter, but this one follows the book by Thomas Harris. And again, when I say it's the movie that could, the little engine that could, no one really would have assumed that a horror film, a psychological horror film like this, would be in the conversation for a Best Actor, Best Actress, let alone Best Picture nomination, and certainly wins. But in part because the Academy, I think, to their discredit, really tends not to recognize horror films. It's rare that these kind of genre films will be given any sort of honor or recognition outside of maybe a technical award, nomination. But generally speaking, you will not see horror films nominated in the major categories. I mean, every so often one may sort of rise above the fray, but generally the Academy does not look, I want to say they look down on these types of movies, but they're not ones that sort of register in the conversation. And I think that's generally sad. But The Silence of the Lambs is one of those movies where, people can try to, hide it all they want and say, oh, well, it's really more of this deep drama, or it's a, character study. Look, it's a horror film, and it's a well-done horror film that is dealing with a lot of issues and psychological matters that make it all the more compelling. So let's just sort of tackle this film. And because, on its face, on the surface, you're dealing with a movie about an FBI agent, or an FBI agent in training, Clary Starling, who is trying to find a serial killer, while at the same time being fed information by another serial killer. So, that's the basic plot of this movie. But what elevates this film is the fact that it is much richer than just a simple good guy chasing the bad guy. The fact that you have a character like Hannibal Lecter, played by the incomparable Anthony Hopkins, who, of course, took home the Oscar gold that year, the fact that you have this kind of character elevated to such a level of prominence was quite rare. Psychopaths, serial killers in movies were generally not portrayed in this manner, where, it's easy to see, based on this film, why Hannibal Lecter sort of took over this entire franchise, if you will. And you see the other two films feature his character quite prominently. What Hopkins is able to do in this film, and it's a relatively short performance, we're talking under 30 minutes in a two-hour film, he is able to create this character that is incredibly charismatic. And again, you wouldn't think to say that about a psychopath like Hannibal Lecter, who eats people. That's his whole shtick. He's a cannibal. Hannibal the cannibal. The fact that he's able to make him intelligent, cunning, and perhaps not sympathetic, but understandable in a way, where he's not just this mustache-twirling bad guy locked away, but there is this sort of psychological underpinning. And the fact that you pair him opposite Jodie Foster's Clary Starling, and it turns into this, not quite a game of cat and mouse, that's much more what she's doing with the Buffalo Bill character and trying to catch him, but it's a psychological game of cat and mouse. The fact that Lecter is able to get inside this woman's head and, on the one hand, have fun with her. It's really a game for him. He enjoys tormenting people and sort of getting them to question themselves and their motives and turn everything around to his own advantage. But at the same time, there's also this sort of unspoken relationship between the two of them. And certainly the books explore it in other ways. And the second film, Hannibal, really does carry on that thread to another level. Here it's sort of understated. It's there could be romantic undertones, but at the same time it's more of this sort of interesting dynamic of the cop and the robber, and sort of this back and forth game that they play, and really sort of pulling things apart, apart from each other, and sort of getting to the root of what their own issues are. You take, in the case of Lecter, he's incarcerated, he's angry, he's raging, he wants to be free. You have, in the case of Clary Starling, someone who is trying to not only outrun her past and her fears, but also prove herself. Again, that sort of drives her story in the film, where she's not only trying to erase the painful memories of her childhood, but she's also trying to rescue the senator's daughter and trying to find vindication and personal justice that way, while sort of projecting all of her own, you know, flaws and torments onto this serial killer case that she is involved in. And you sort of have that going on with Lecter. You have that drama going on with Clarice, and it really creates this rather interesting dichotomy of two characters who, in some weird symbiotic way, ultimately end up helping each other. Lecter is able to escape in this film in part because of his interaction and dealings with Clarice, and Clarice is ultimately able to have this sort of internal catharsis because of her own dealings with Lecter. So again, whenever, you know, people try to dismiss this film as, oh, it's just a good, well-made thriller, it is that, but it is so much more. The fact that you have all of this going on with, again, not your average characters. You've got a psychopath on the one hand and an FBI agent on the other. Not your usual pairings for a, you know, sort of a psychological drama, but that's, again, what makes it all the more compelling. And then you bring in the character of Buffalo Bill, who is, of course, a mass-murdering serial killer and a psychopath in his own right, but he's also presented in a three-dimensional way. He is killing women, but he's not killing them kind of as a unspoken or unanswered reason, but he's doing it as sort of this way of sort of taking their skin and transitioning, you know, in his own way to you know, become a woman. It's a very, very complicated and very, you know, heavy set of themes. And you think of this is, you know, 1991. Today you wouldn't think probably twice about making a movie with these kind of storylines and themes, but certainly in 1991, this was revolutionary ideas in a lot of ways, and particularly, you know, for a film that would go all the way to at the Academy Awards. But I've said this before with my appreciation and love for horror films. That's the beauty of the genre, is you can tackle these type of themes and ideas. You have, in the case of, you know, drama or trauma and repression and sexuality and femininity and all of those ideas, and sort of working them out in a way that, you know, kind of presents them to the audience where it's not just characters having, you know, long dialogues or, you know, monologues or just sort of, you know, preaching their point, but sort of doing it in a way that is ultimately kind of more constructive and effective, where it can resonate with the audience and achieve something much more monumental. And again, that's the beauty of a horror film. You can sort of touch those, you know, taboo subjects or, you know, third rail ideas in a way that you otherwise couldn't in a more traditional film. But the movie is so much more than just all of these ideas working in place. The direction of this film is top-notch, and the fact is it all stems from the script. And the book itself is quite large, and it definitely is a streamlined version of it, and it sort of takes the best parts and then expands it. But even then, and there's been documentaries made in the years since the film, where what's on the page is only half of the ordeal. You really do need the actors to take what's there and elevate it. You can, you know, recite a line left and right, but it takes an actor to sort of bring it to life in a way and give it that rhythm and motivation. And, you know, when you look at this film as it is now, you can't imagine anyone but Jodie Foster or Anthony Hopkins in their roles as Clarice and Lecter, respectively. But for me, I think what makes this film so compelling, and every time I watch it, it's one of those movies where, even though I've seen it a number of times and I've dissected it and I've, you know, discussed it at length, it's one of those movies where every time I watch it or I rewatch it, it feels like I am watching it for the first time. You pick up on little moments that you might otherwise miss. Again, this moment in the film where Lecter is being heckled and tormented by his psychiatrist, Dr. Chilton, and he's set to be transferred to another facility, and he's all caged up on the stretcher, and his face is covered with a mask. And there's a moment where he has, you know, he sees Chilton's pen, and of course that's the pen that Lecter is able to somehow ingest into himself and then use as his means of escape later on. But there's a moment, and you kind of blink if you miss it, but later on where Chilton is looking for his pen and he doesn't have it in his pocket. And that's just a nice little, you know, sort of callback to that moment. And again, it has that tremendous payoff in the film. And you see it over and over again with all the characters. You look at Clarice in the film, especially at the start. There's a great scene when she's getting called into the office, and she's just going to see Agent Crawford, and she's waiting for the elevator, and you know, Jodie Foster's not that tall to begin with, and she gets into the elevator, and she's surrounded by all of these 6 foot guys, and she's the only woman in the vicinity, and she's sort of, again, that's part of her journey. She's trying to prove herself throughout the film, and then of course, by the end of it, she is the center of attention. She's earned everybody's respect and admiration for her capture of Buffalo Bill, and again, just for that nice, payoff that the film continues to deliver. And again, that final scene between her and Buffalo Bill, a moment that has been emulated and certainly imitated over the years since, but I've never seen it captured again in such a way where it is so effective, where it is literally just her in the dark and trying to find him with the lights off. And, the film does a great job of going back and forth and switching with the points of view of Buffalo Bill watching her trying to find her way. And then, of course, ultimately she succeeds in taking him down. And it's just it's a perfect way of just executing suspense and adrenaline. And again, I said it before, delivering that payoff where by the end of the film, you feel vindicated and totally sort of justified by having watched the experience. It's not just that, sort of, all right, we're checking the boxes here and passing time, but there's really a point to all of this. And even though the movie has, essentially it's a cliffhanger in a way, even though it's, the sequel for the film would not follow for, I think it was like 8 or 9 years later, the fact that at the very end of the film, Lecter does get away, he does escape, you sort of expect, oh, there's going to be one final twist, but no, that's the beauty of it. The fact that Lecter is able to accomplish what he set out to accomplish, which was to escape and then ultimately get his revenge on Dr. Chilton. We never see it. We don't need to see it. We know what he's going to. We know what he's going to do. We know what he does best. He's going to have an old friend for dinner. That's, again, that's the beauty of this film. All of these characters, even someone like Lecter, is able to accomplish his objective. Even someone like Jack Crawford in the film, who doesn't have a huge role, but is certainly prominent in Clarice's storyline, he also gets a nice full circle arc, sort of going from this, stiff upper lip and skeptical of Starling to ultimately earning, giving her his respect and sort of viewing her as an equal. And again, everybody has their moment to shine. And that's, I think, part of what makes this film work outside of just the great performances, the suspense, the tension, the drama. It's the fact that you've got all these different storylines, all these different characters, and everybody wants something and everybody's trying to accomplish something, whether it's sort of, external or internal, and ultimately they all get what they want. They all are able to achieve their objectives and have some kind of resolution in their own stories as well as that of the greater story at large. I mean, this is just one of those movies where you can watch it again and again, and you can pick out different parts with each storyline and find new information and new facets that you may not have appreciated the first time. And again, it's one of those movies where you almost sort of have to say, okay, who is the main character here? I mean, certainly Clary Starling is the one that we follow through the majority of the film, and she really is the emotional weight of it. But you could also see this as Hannibal Lecter's film in a way. You could see it as Buffalo Bill. You know, you could even in a way see it as Jack Crawford if you wanted to sort of take that point of view. You've got all these different storylines, you've got all these different perspectives. And sometimes in these sort of psychological dramas, they don't always work, but here it does. And I think that's partly because you have such a compelling set of narratives, but also motivations. Like, everything is clearly stated out at the beginning, and we're following it through beat by beat all the way to the finish. I mean, this is just one of those movies where if you haven't seen it, and again, I'm always, sort of surprised whenever someone says, oh, I've never seen Silence of the Lambs. I'd say, well, stop what you're doing right now and go find a copy or, you know, God forbid, watch it on a streaming platform. This is one of those movies where even if you're not a fan of the genre or these types of films, this is one movie you have to see, I think, at least once, because putting aside all of the theatrics and the genre tricks of it, it's just a damn good film. It's an entertaining film, and it's a well-made film, and certainly earned all of those prestigious awards back in the day. You know, here's hoping that the Academy will come full circle again and honor future horror films, and perhaps this year we shall see. But any event, I just wanted to share some thoughts on The Silence of the Lambs because I've never covered that one on the film here. And it's just one of those movies where it's a personal classic. I mean, certainly a lot of people rank this film as one of their all-time favorites. And it's one of those cases where I certainly saw it later on after it had already, you know, been out and, you know, was part of the mainstream. And you always think, oh, will it ever live up to the hype? Well, this is a film where it not only lives up to the hype is justified, and it surpasses it 1,000%. Again, when you can take a psychopathic serial killer, a cannibal, and make him a compelling and intriguing character in his own right, then I think you've done something incredible and left a piece of cinema history. But there we go. A few thoughts on The Silence of the Lambs. Let me know your thoughts and reactions to this film and some of your favorite scenes as well. But that does it for me today, everybody. I'll be back next week, and we'll do this all over again for the love of movies.